Hello and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler and today is the 19th of May 2011. With me as usual, my co-hosts, Stephen Brett, say hello.
Good evening.
And Trevor Williams.
Hello.
Oh, what a great week this has been. Lots of news. Yet again, we've got a jam-packed show. Steve has been tweeting and Facebooking ahead of time, haven't you? Some of the stories we're going to talk about.
Yeah, try and drum up some support.
So we're actually going to try and stick to that. I don't know what Trev's got, but we will make sure he gets a go, don't worry. And we'll have our regular feature. Before we continue this week, we'll plug things.
Right, okay.
So, if you want to
tweet us during the show, the Twitter profile is at ThinkRant.
That's correct. Or you can check us out on Facebook just by searching for ThinkRant Podcast. And there's a community on there. We've also got a blog, thinkrant.blogspot.com. That's it, really.
Yeah, so get involved.
Oh, no, no.
Tell us your thoughts.
As Stephen rightly said last week, although possibly after the recording had finished, post a review on iTunes. Mention it early in case people switch off halfway through. It could be rubbish. You never know.
In that case, don't leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, if your review's going to be rubbish, don't bother.
Yeah.
We'll say a reminder at the end, and if you're still around for it,
because you know, we don't believe in censorship, so we don't want to delete your review. So you know
you can't delete reviews.
Can't delete them, can you?
No,
that's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, freedom of speech.
Hang on, you can't delete reviews. That sounds like a man who's tried to delete a review.
Well, actually, it's an assumption, but surely that wouldn't be fair, would it? If you could, and I haven't seen a delete button. So, we'll continue with the show, and this week, I'm thinking, who shall go first? Now, how many stories have you got, Trev, apart from your Catholic story? If you have one, we don't know yet.
I've got two Catholic stories, and another Think Rant Rhymey story.
Do you want to open up, or do you want us to go first?
Well, actually, I'm fairly sure somebody else will have this one as well. So, can I open with my Rhymey story?
Yeah, go for it.
It's Think Rant, Sink France.
I think Steve's going to
like
it.
I'm sure everybody... everyone's got to support this. You got to be behind it. And it's the fact that France is currently tearing itself apart between those who are appalled at the unacceptably criminal behaviour of Dominic Strauss-Kahn, those who are unacceptably gleeful at the appalling criminal behaviour of Dominic Strauss-Kahn, those who appallingly think Dominic Strauss-Kahn's criminal behaviour is acceptable, and the twats who think it's a conspiracy.
And the other French can just go, meh.
Yeah, that's it. You'd think the French would go, ah, okay, so what? But a poll conducted yesterday, it didn't say how reliable the poll was or what the questions asked really were, but it showed over 50% of the French believe in a conspiracy theory trying to set him up. This is a theory which necessitates that the first and only woman approached by the shadowy forces had impeccable sexual history for the sting to work, utterly foul moral standards in order to perform the sting, and the intelligence and restraint to hide the massive payoff she did it for. It makes no sense.
And what is supposedly, you know, why would this need to happen? You know, who's going to gain from this? In the big picture,
Gordon Brown, because he wants to be the head of the IMF, doesn't he?
Oh,
well,
right.
In
so
France, there. No, Dominic Strauss-Kahn was going to be the rival to Sarkozy in the next round of elections.
Of course, he was.
So they're all thinking that it's all internal French politics, and somebody's up to something.
Is Sarkozy able to run again?
I can't remember. Yeah, he only had one term.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry, for some reason I thought you'd done two. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I thought, is anybody else bringing up that story as
I wasn't
kind
because
of moral quandary deal?
Well, for me, you know, I just got mixed feelings. I don't know what I think about it. I mean, if he's guilty, then obviously he needs locking up. But there's this whole debate of, you know, should he... Well, he has to...
Community.
No, should he... Well, some people have said stuff like, well, because he didn't use his diplomatic immunity, he must be not guilty. I'm not so sure on that. But does he have it?
Does he have it? No, I wouldn't have thought he did. He's not a foreign diplomat, is he? He's basically the head of a bank.
Yeah, so I don't think...
He is a man who has had access to it. It's just that the reasons why he was in New York at the time didn't fall under the remit of his ability to use it. So it would have been pointless for him to try.
Ah, see.
It's not that he's being wonderful and...
Trev has the knowledge. Okay.
Yeah, he's not assuming that he's going to get off.
Okay. But, you know, this whole thing is, you know, should he quit or should he not quit? You know, well, he's going to have to quit just out of practicality, because if he's in jail, you know, if he's...
Well, he should just be suspended from his role, shouldn't he, at the moment? He should be suspended from his role until he's proven innocent or guilty.
Hmm. I do
At which point he resumes, if he's innocent, he resumes his role. If he's guilty, he gets banged up and gets fired.
Yeah, but if you resign, obviously you don't get to do that. You can't resume your post if you resign.
But that's what I'm saying, but he shouldn't have to resign, because, you know, at the moment, he hasn't been found guilty of a crime.
Mm.
Whether he's done it or not is a different matter, but, you know, in a court of law, he's still innocent.
Yeah.
But I think the administrative capabilities and the internet connectivity of a remand cell in New York is probably a little bit low for being the head of the...
But that's why you suspend him. You can't sack him, because he's not guilty. How can you do that?
No, but they couldn't sack him, but they effectively forced him to resign.
You suspend him. That would be the correct practice.
Hmm.
Would be to suspend him of his duties, put somebody else in as an interim head, and, you know, pending the outcome of the court case, depends whether he gets the job back or not. I mean, if he's innocent, why should he suffer? Why should he lose his job?
Well, no, I agree with. You know, it's quite sometimes, you know, you see these high-profile cases, it's quite easy to kind of get swept up in the, you know, the media furore, and you're thinking, well, what if it was just your average person and an average job? Is it fair for them to lose their job just because they've been accused of something?
Exactly, that's my point. Hmm. You know, if it's trial by media already, you know, yes, he may be guilty, he may very well be innocent. We don't know, we don't have the facts at the moment.
Hmm.
So that's what the court of law is there to decide. And, you know, whatever the outcome from there is, you know, what we have to accept.
What are your thoughts on the perp walk, Trev?
The what now?
The perp walk. This has been in the news today relating to him over the... basically, in the States, when you're arrested and you're taken to and from the court, you're taken in cuffs in front of the camera. In this country, you're put in a van so no one can see you. But the Americans are quite proud of their perp walk culture. But obviously, that's what adds to the trial by media, you know, the sight of the person in handcuffs. And I was just thinking, you know, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it's pretty...
assassinate patsies as well.
Yes. Well done.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah.
But it is dreadful, even though we're all making our assumptions as much as anybody is about the guy. The point about it is, given the nature of the crime, it shouldn't have been revealed what his name was. I know we would have to say that he's had to step down for some reason, but in this country and in America, I think it's wrong for an accusation to lead to a public declaration of identity.
Well, it's not in these circumstances, because in actual fact, it was something which that was brought to Parliament, I think, last year, or in the last year of the Labour government. They were trying to get anonymity for people accused of rape.
Sex crimes in general.
And because, you know, at the end of the day, you can be perfectly innocent and accused of rape, but your name is in the press and you're forever associated with that crime. But, you know, that got booted out of Parliament, and there's nothing to stop somebody who's been accused of a sex crime being named. Unless, obviously, they're underage or something like that.
But it's insane that it got booted out. I get the feeling that people wanted to not be seen to be crime of rape, but it's not.
The feminists got hold of it, didn't they? And they're like, well, it gives men a place to hide, etc., etc., etc. And then that was the agenda. And I can kind of see that point, because it does give guilty men a place to hide. But on the flip side of that, why should an innocent man be condemned as a rapist for the rest of his life?
Yeah, and if they've been arrested, it means that there is going to be a trial. There will be an outcome. You know, and maybe it could, if you could interlock it with, you know, the bail system, say, well, you know, if you're going to go out and bail, we think that there might be a chance you're going to reoffend, then maybe it is in the public interest to name you. You know, I'm just, you know, coming up with scenarios here. See, if you're willing to stay under lock and key, we'll keep your name secret, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that a lot of the cases that fall apart with rape is partially because of the plea to the jury of, look at this poor man, he's suffered enough. Already his name has been dragged through the papers, everybody knows about it. There's bound to be an appeal to the sympathy of the jury there. And everything were more focused and there was more rigor in the process, then it could be dealt with as a more robust investigation of the crime.
I mean, the terrible thing is there's one thing which, you know, David Cameron has said, which I absolutely agree with him on, believe it or not, which is unbelievable.
Bloody hell.
I know, which is why he said yesterday that it's, you know, the true, well, obviously talking about the whole Ken Clark thing, which I think we'll come on to later anyway, but, you know, he came out and said at that point that the true, you know, well, criminal thing then about the whole change to the policy is the fact that such a low proportion of rape cases ends with an outcome, you know, with a guilty outcome. You know, and
he said that's Labour's fault.
And you know, I think you make a good point there, Trevor. You know, it is an appeal to the for the jury to say, you know, oh look, he's had his life ruined already, which isn't a place to hide, but I don't see that keeping a name anonymous during the course of a trial, because at the end of the day, our justice system is quite clear that a person is innocent until they're proven guilty.
And I wouldn't have it any other way.
And, you know, it shouldn't be any other way. Then that person has rights to be protected. So it doesn't seem right to me that guilty or not, that somebody can be named in a sex case.
Quite right. I think we all agree on that one.
Yeah. The problem is for me, and this is whenever politicians have been talking about how low the rate of conviction is in rape cases, I kind of get worried when they say we want to increase this. Okay, not because I'm worried. You know, I want people to get off.
Miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, I'm not for that. What I'm saying is what are they going to do to increase this rate? And is it actually going to increase the rate of conviction of guilty people or just the conviction of people? And the thing is, with rape cases, a lot of the time, it's one person against another. It's the say of one person against another.
But, I mean, this does go quite nicely into, you know, Ken Clark's comment here, doesn't it, really? And the whole furore which kicked off around that yesterday. And,
well,
the fact that, you know, the government are trying to put through a policy where if a man says, yeah, I'm guilty, they'll get a reduced sentence, which I don't agree with anyway, to be honest with you. But Ken Clark is trying to portray that as saying, well, it's going to lead to higher conviction rates because, you know, people who have been accused of rape will, you know, say, yeah, I'm guilty because they're only going to get 15 months in prison instead of 5 years.
And perhaps even capturing people who aren't guilty, who will just do it because it'll have it all over and done with.
And then trying to say as well that it's going to help the victims, because if they plead guilty, the victims won't have to come into court to relive the witness testimony. Now, yeah, I'm all for that because, you know, rape is a horrific crime. And, you know, I think it's horrible that women have to relive that when they're given evidence. However, you know, don't try and pull the wool over our eyes. It's nothing to do with helping the victims or increasing the conviction rate. It's all about lowering the number of people in prison.
And saving money as well.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what it's all about.
But which crime are we talking about here? Is it rape? Or is it serious rape? No, I really mean it. Which is... isn't that what he's planning on bringing in?
We talked about this earlier, and it was... He made a... what appears to be a slip of the tongue, saying that
he got confused. You know, at the end of the day, he's in the pressure of a live radio interview, and he got his words mixed up. He got confused, and instead of saying statutory rape, he said date rape.
Yeah, big mistake.
And that's where he got confused. And you know, quite rightly, he's been, you know, dragged up for it, and you know, he has eventually come out and apologised for it because, you know, date rape is horrific. Statutory rape is a different case. And the argument he was trying to make is that the 15 months figure, which the presenters were quoting at him, is skewed because the 5-year average sentence which is given out for rapists includes people who've been convicted of statutory rape, which lowers the average of the sentences.
Sure.
And that's what he was trying to say. Unfortunately, he used the wrong word and then got bogged down into this whole levels of seriousness of rape. I think it was interesting last night on Newsnight when Paxman was interviewing Yvette Cooper, and you know, he asked Yvette Cooper directly, do you genuinely think Ken Clark believes there are different levels of rape? And Yvette Cooper just refused to answer the question, which I think, you know, shows in itself that actually Ken Clark, in all fairness, doesn't think there's different levels of rape. He just made a mistake.
And it's just the usual opposition jumping on someone's
bandwagon.
Yeah.
He is one of the Tories that I hate the least, I'll give him that. But what he said was, and the fact that he hasn't made a proper apology about it afterwards, he said, oh, you all got the wrong end of the stick. What he should have said is, I would be appalled that anybody would misconstrue what I said, and I'd hate for anybody out there in the public to see it as an approval of dreadful opinions. Because, you know, there are appalling sexual deviants out there who crack awful jokes in the pub and say things about, like, if a woman comes out of a rape and she hasn't got bruises, then it's not real rape. She didn't fight hard enough. That kind of dreadful misogyny.
Blaming the rape victim, again.
Yeah, that kind of thing still gets chatted about in pubs openly.
And, yeah.
You know, nobody wants to be the one to tell the git to shut up.
No, but I mean, in all fairness to Ken Clark, I mean, that isn't, you know, that he wasn't saying there's levels of rape in that sort of sense. He did come out afterwards and say, and you know, I'm not a Tory lover at all, but he did come out afterwards and say that he, you know, apologised for anybody who misconstrued what he was saying. And he did say, you know, he said, I can't remember the words he used, but he did say that rape was a serious crime, and you know.
What I want to know is, why has this buried the bigger story, in my mind, of what Nadine Dorries has said?
I totally agree.
That if young girls have been taught abstinence and to say no young, that there would be less child abuse, which is, in effect, blaming victims for not saying no. She's Tory. Wow. She's an MP.
That is correct. That is what she said.
That is exactly what she said.
She said basically what she said, to paraphrase in a nutshell, that kids who've been abused, it's their fault because they didn't say no.
Yeah. And then when this was brought to her attention, that she was basically blaming victims, she took it as, she played the martyr and said, oh, you're just attacking me because I'm a Tory. So she made it all about herself in a very narcissistic way. She is a complete, in my opinion, a complete witch. And her views are distasteful in the highest order.
Well, you hear it a lot from America, the abstinence brigade, who are basically saying, if you're going to bring up your children to be sluts, then don't be surprised when they get abused. And when you tell them that those kind of opinions are the most unacceptable, hateful garbage, they'll say, don't have a go at my religion, or some other petty excuse.
Well, yeah, she says, don't have a go at me because I'm a Tory. So, you know, it's the same sort of thing.
That's
abhorrent. It's absolutely disgusting. You know, it's how you can shift any blame onto the victim of an abuse, of any type of abuse or rape or any sort of sexual assault. It's disgusting.
But I've been wanting to bring up her abstinence story for the last couple of weeks and just never got round to it. But she's, you know, she's been tabling a motion to pass into law that sex education should include a kind of abstinence education for girls. Have you heard about this, Trevor?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So she thinks that girls need to be able to be told to say no. Boys are okay. Maybe she thinks that...
Go do your thing, boys. Do what you want to do.
Yeah. But girls are the ones that need to say no. And not just that, but she's so naive that she thinks abstinence is going to reduce STDs and pregnancy rather than, let's just focus on telling people to use
effective education
and contraceptives, etc. And the woman is so backward, it's unbelievable.
What's even more backward, though, is that she got elected for a second time.
Yeah. So the people of Mid Bedfordshire,
Not sure where she is.
Yeah, Mid-Bedfordshire, hanging heads in shame. And just to add to making us feel even worse about how she got elected, I believe she got elected with 26% of the vote. So all the people that didn't vote for AV, hang your heads in shame as well. Because this is going to continue. We're going to have Tories like that. Thank you very much. Twats.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear you slipping off the moral high ground quite so fast with just the one word.
Sorry? This podcast has two parts to its name. We try and stick to first. But every so often, we slip off the moral high ground into the second.
And quite rightly too, because, you know, well, people like her just need to be brought to book. Do you know what I mean? I just cannot believe in this day and age that you've got somebody who is just, well, yeah, backward. I mean, that's the only way you can describe it. Is she is so backward.
Okay, let's move on.
Because we could easily spend the whole hour.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we've done 20 minutes. Beliefs. We've segued nicely across stories, though. I was quite happy with that. But let's hit a couple of things.
Don't show the children the magic.
Let's have a more humorous story, shall we? Shall I give my one story for this week?
Oh, go on then, go.
I know John follows Darren Brown on Twitter. I'm not sure if you do, Trev. But there was a great retweet from Darren Brown this week. There's a lady in America who is a self-proclaimed witch, and she's been prosecuted and found guilty of several driving offences, and is due to do jail time. However, she's appealing it on the grounds that she doesn't acknowledge the law of human beings because she's not.
She's of another world.
She's of another world. So therefore, the law has no jurisdiction over her. So,
I think what she says should be taken into consideration. And rather than have to spend, I don't know, 3 months in one of those human jail cells, spend an indefinite amount of time under medical supervision, as she clearly means.
Well, we said burn her at the stake there.
Yeah, burn her at the stake, or in true Monty Python style, throw her in a pond and see if she floats.
Yeah.
And if she floats, then burn her. Because, you know, you burn wood and wood floats. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. So the other part of that story, the irony of it was that you know, in the court case, it was mentioned that you know, they took her license off her and stuff like that. I love how she's not she doesn't have to obey the law of the land, but she still went and got a driver's license. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. So nice one, Steve.
Is insurance cheaper if you can actually do magic?
I don't know. Surely she shouldn't have hung around. She could have just flown off on a broomstick. You know, well, why exactly stay around for the court case?
Well, why was she driving the car in the first place?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a hatchback broomstick? No.
To be fair, the shopping just keeps falling
off. But when you're flying, you can hang bags off the back, can't you? Like, you know, on cycles, bicycles, you've got very those saddle packs, you know?
Very unbalanced.
Well, you know, it's just how you pack the bags, isn't it, you know?
And especially if she's old. She's not like some sprightly Hermione Granger.
She's only 41.
Oh, to be fair, with those
tits, she's got a cracking rack,
you know,
as well.
She was going to be off balance on a broomstick. So, okay, yeah, we'll move on.
We just thought we'd lighten things up a little bit there.
Okay, we're going to go downhill fast now.
We'll come off that story just 10 or 15 seconds too late.
Right.
Was it the boobs comment, Trev? Was it that?
It was around there.
It's time for our regular feature.
Hooray!
Guess the year.
Guess the year, not
no, 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 no. He gets his jingle in a bit. He can have it after this before we move on with the serious stories. Okay, so it's guess the year. And the current scores are Stephen on 3 points. And
how many points you got, Trev?
And Trevor's on zero.
That would be no points. In a challenge of two minds, I'm coming forth.
Okay, so he's going to put some effort in this week, he promises. So here we go. April the 4th, the North Atlantic Treaty is signed in Washington, D.C., creating the NATO Defense Alliance. May the 11th, Israel is admitted to the United Nations.
Steve, 1947.
Nope, sorry, you're locked out. United Nations as its 59th member. February the 2nd, Brent Spiner, American actor, was born.
Oh, yeah. Data.
Trev, 1950?
Nope, I'm sorry, you're locked out. Radiocarbon dating technique discovered by Willard Libby and his colleagues at the University of Chicago, work for which Libby will receive the Nobel Prize in 1960.
Steve? 1954.
Nope, sorry, you're locked out. June 14th, Albert II, a rhesus monkey, becomes the first mammal in space in a US-launched V-2 rocket, reaching an altitude of 83 miles, but dying on impact after a parachute failure.
Aww.
Why are you smiling when you say that?
I'm sorry, I was expecting your arse to cover up, you know, the splattered
your
monkey.
Chuckles.
You want my arse to cover up a splatter?
Your laugh.
You. Oh, right, sorry.
January the 11th, Los Angeles, California receives its first recorded snowfall. Recorded, obviously.
Trev, 1952.
No, sorry. 8th of June, George Orwell's book, 1984, is published.
Ah.
15th of March, post-war rationing of clothes ends. Go on.
Trev, 1948.
No, I'm sorry.
I couldn't believe you didn't get that one.
24th of August, Old Trafford Trafford Football Stadium.
It wasn't 1948?
Nope. Old Trafford
Steve,
Football...
1949?
Yes, it's 49.
Oh, that's insane. Seriously, the first publication of 1984 was not in 1948?
No, he wrote it in 48. It was published in 49. I double-checked that myself, because... Sorry, dude. Because...
Man.
You, yeah.
Unlucky trade.
So I went for, like, one of those weird QI potentially reliable myths.
And it was wrong.
No. He wrote it in 48, but it was published in 49. Feel free to check it out. I do research this. I don't just make it up. So, I'm afraid...
I'm going to say I trust you.
Well, you know, I don't mind.
You know, I'm going to look it up later.
Did you look on YouTube?
Yeah, that's where all the reliable information comes from. So, thanks very much for playing, guys. But it's 4-0 to Steve. And we're going to, before you know you get too upset, we're going to move on to a story of genuine interest, I think, that we should maybe discuss a bit more, which is the story of a woman who was disfigured by an acid attack.
Yep.
Getting... justice, in inverted commas, by being able to... Well, I think she was offered 10,000... Something equivalent to £10,000. Or being able to inflict the same punishment on her attacker, which would have been done by injection in a hospital under anaesthetic, but basically he would have been left blind. I take it you've heard of this story, Trev?
No, that's appalling. Where the, is that Iran?
It is Iran, yes.
Right, that was just a shot in the dark, actually. I was thinking that's the most appalling judicial idea I've heard in weeks. It must be Iran.
No, it wasn't Northern Ireland or anywhere, or you know, somewhere just off the coast. It was in an Islamic country, obviously. So what are your feelings on the good old-fashioned eye for an eye?
Well, I shall quote Mahatma Gandhi at this point.
Okay, go on then.
An eye for an eye and the world will be blind.
Nice one, Gandhi.
Okay.
Well, I think it's a bit crazy.
That's ridiculously barbaric.
Yeah.
It's obscene, isn't it?
I
mean, don't get me wrong, the crime in the first place is disgusting and terrible. But, you know, inflicting it doesn't make it right.
And what made this worse is that the victim actually came out after and said, okay, I won't do it, but you need to give me more money.
Nice.
You kind of lose sympathy with me when you start doing things like that. Really.
Well, maybe she was just scared she'd miss throwing the acid in his face or something. She's blind now anyway.
No, she doesn't get to throw it. It would have been done as an operation, Steve.
Because, you know, it'd be pretty pointless, wouldn't it, if she missed? And
she'd feel robbed. Yeah.
Exactly.
But, yeah, this kind of... But, of course, if you follow this story anywhere, like the Daily Mail, there's a lot of comments saying...
Natural justice.
They need to bring this... they need to bring this in
here. What, Islamic law into the UK?
They need to bring Islamic law into the UK.
Surely not.
I'm sure the Daily Mail will be fine if she throwed a bunch of acid at him and then they had a bag of acid each and it would be best of three. That's appalling for so many reasons. It's the same kind of thing when I hear about animal cruelty. I think that the people should be severely punished, not because I give a shit about the animals. I really don't. I what I care about is that people should not behave badly or want to behave badly. The man who did this dreadful thing, I couldn't care less if he lives or dies. But for a state to want to do that is appalling.
You've hit the nail on the head there. It's not humane, is it?
Well, we've already said we did this. We did a thing on capital punishment before on the podcast, and we both said, you know, the state shouldn't be in the business of handing out death sentences and, in effect, maiming people. You know, so no. But as
now, how many guilty deaths does it take to equal the one that you get wrong?
Well, exactly. You know, and. You know, even if the guy pleaded guilty and, you know, you're pretty much as certain as you can be that he did it, I just think that the world is meant to be a more civilized place now.
Yeah.
And I think it's just countries and ideologies like that that are holding us back. And, you know, people just might call me just a hand-wringing lefty, liberal, you know, whatever. I don't care. But at least I can turn around and say that kind of behaviour is not acceptable. You know, it wasn't acceptable when it was done to her, hence why it's a crime.
And that's why it's not acceptable to do it back to him, because we're, you know, what is the difference in effect?
No, exactly. So, you know, I'm glad I knew we'd all agree on that, but, you know, I'm sure there may be some listeners who...
Let's have a look on Twitter, see if anyone's tweeted at ThinkRant.
Okay. Well, while you do that quickly, did you have anything else you wanted to say, Trev?
I just hope there's some nutter on Twitter going, no, kill
them all.
Cut their balls off. Cut the balls off, then kill them.
Or we could just be the sun and pretend to be Dear Deirdre and just make up all the letters and thing. Whoa, hang on, yeah, that's libelous. Yeah. No. That someone like Dear Deirdre, who's not as honest as Dear Deirdre, may make up all the letters and things like that. Sorry.
That's an anagram of Dead Dreary.
That's factual, so it's not libelous.
That's true.
Sadly, no one's tweeted us.
Oh. They're too busy listening.
Of course. Okay. We're not being contentious enough.
Steve, what's our quota? Have we hit the stories that we've been talking about on Facebook and Twitter?
We've got one of them. So we need to hit Uncaged Monkeys, and we need to hit up Stephen Hawking on philosophy.
Oh, well, me and Trevor...
We need to hit up Stephen Hawking. Now that's going to get people talking. God.
Okay.
Let's do it, man. Imagine the ratings.
Right. We'll do philosophy first, and then we'll do Trev's thing.
Yeah.
We'll do Trev's feature. Right. And then if we got time for Uncaged Monkeys, it might get pushed again. But we will talk, you know, we will talk about it. So, quickly, now, Hawking's been out again. Saying stuff like he does.
I could do a very bad impression. I did not.
We will not do impressions. Okay, we're not syncing that.
Sorry.
Okay. So
you say he's been out saying stuff like he does, but he doesn't.
No. Okay, he hasn't been saying much. His
voice box has been
his voice box.
Voice module.
Okay.
We'll skip that. Right. Now, when he released his last book, The Grand Design, which you read, haven't you, Trev?
No, I haven't read that
one. Okay, it's a good book. You can borrow it off me. Okay.
Oh, cool. Cheers.
He released the book, and in the book, and what was announced in the media, was that he declared philosophy was dead. Now, I have a problem with this, because I think it's not only not true, I think he's an ass for saying it. Because it's patently not true, and I think he ignores a lot of facts about science and philosophy. The science of philosophy, I mean, there's a branch of philosophy dedicated to science. So I got a major problem with that. But But he also this week said there was no heaven as well, which he saw a lot of criticism for.
Quite amusing criticism in some
quite amusing well. Criticism from some great theologians such as, I'm just trying to think of his name now,
Kirk
Cameron.
Oh yeah, great thinker. He's a
the great theologian
man.
Who hangs around with the Banana Man, also known as, I'm trying to think of his name now as well, we're the master, but we'll come back to that. So Trev, what do you think? Is philosophy dead?
No, of course not. That's ridiculous. There is never going to be a time when philosophy is dead because it encompasses all of the ideas that you can never be sure of.
Which includes science and, you know, much as people might not want
and
to...
ethics and morality, the reliability of the senses that you use to decide whether your science is valid. All kinds of things will fall under the banner of philosophy.
Hmm. And I'm just wondering why he would say such... Well, to me, it's patently ridiculous. You know, no, I know science gives us so much, you know, what I would class as knowledge, but I don't think that means that somehow it makes philosophy redundant, because it actually requires philosophy to tell us why science does work in the first place.
I think I know why he said it. If it was an interview, he might be with somebody who asked a question, say, how do you feel about... philosophers at the moment, and he probably spent ages breathing and looking and doing his weird thing, constructing a sentence that's supposed to say most of the philosophers I know are actually a bunch of twats.
Well, most of the philosophers I've read are dead.
Yeah. Or some long thing, say, oh god, don't have them for a dinner party, they'll just talk and you won't get a word in, they're a bunch of shits. And then he accidentally deleted the whole lot. So he thought, oh, bollocks, you're getting three words out of me, philosophy's dead. Because it's got to be a hard process for him.
Yeah, the problem is, you know, you've given him the benefit of the doubt there, and I think that's very generous of you, but he has actually now said it twice. He said it in the original interview.
Oh, fuck him then.
He repeated it in a Google convention this week. You know, he's saying that philosophers aren't taking on board particle physics and things like that, which I don't even think that's true. I think that philosophers have taken everything to heart, really. And I just can't believe that he's made such a simple-minded statement. Not
Given the people that we know through the skeptics and the problems that people face, we know very well that there are those that have gone through scientific and medical training who have no idea about the philosophy of science and the validity of what they're studying, and so for logical fallacies. And that's because they don't have a grounding in the philosophy of science. Philosophy is logical argument.
That's what it is, yeah. So now he's... Well, me and Trev agree on that, and I don't know... Steve doesn't... You don't have an opinion on that, do you? I mean...
Whatever you guys just said.
Yeah, Steve's not... He's not a philosopher. That's okay. Yeah, you know, you don't have to be. But apparently he's made statements saying, you know, there's no heaven and it's just for people who are scared of the dark. Now, as a glib remark, you know, I'm not going to disagree with that. But there was a piece in The Guardian today by somebody who said that Hawking's completely wrong. And he knows he's wrong because he's got evidence there is heaven.
Oh, Jesus.
Did you read this, Trev?
No, I didn't read this either. So what, the guy in The Guardian saying he's got evidence, got evidence and Hawking's...
No. The guy said he's got evidence that there's heaven, okay? Well, this stopped the press, okay? This stopped the press. Now, I can't remember the guy's name, and I wasn't even going to bring this up. It's just come into my head now. So stop the press. This got picked up literally everywhere by PZ Myers on Feringula as well.
Right.
And I'm pausing here in the same place that PZ did. Holy shit, this guy's got evidence for heaven. Amazing. We've been asking for this for ages. And do you know what his evidence for heaven was? Go on, you can guess. No? It was Jesus.
What's his evidence for Jesus?
Well, apparently he read a book somewhere where someone said Jesus was real, and then he said, well, if Jesus died and came back, then there must be a heaven. That was his argument. And somehow The Guardian thought, this is printable. Maybe it was the only thing related to Stephen Hawking that came in across the editor's desk or something. But Yeah, he took a pounding for that, that's for sure. Oh, and that was just in the comments of The Guardian before PZ picked it up.
So, well, the point is that nobody's got any evidence, and unfortunately, neither does Stephen Hawking, about things that you can't prove.
This is so true.
So, you can't say that I know for sure that there is absolutely nothing. What you can say is, I know for sure that these people have no grounding for the crap they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's as far as you can take it.
But just to maybe pick you up on something there, Trev, you're saying something which is completely correct in what you're saying, but are you perhaps not maybe making this distinction where, no, you know, the distinction is not pragmatic? You know, when we say stuff like, you know, where do you park your car outside? Now, when you say that, and they say, are you sure? You say, yeah, definitely. Now, your car might have been nicked, so you don't actually know 100%. So I think anyone who makes a statement saying, yeah, I know for sure, you know, unless they're a philosopher or somebody, you know, who I know is aware of what absolute knowledge means, you know, I just assume that they mean to the best of their abilities, and so I would not actually pick him up on that.
I see where you're going with that, but he's talking about philosophy and he knows the rules very well. So he's just being intellectually lazy.
Well, does he know the rules? Because he just fucking told us that philosophy's dead. So maybe I don't think he had studied it, to be honest. Otherwise, I don't know anyone who's studied philosophy in any depth, serious depth.
Maybe. He has hung around with some of the lights of the new secular atheist community and stuff, so he will have heard all the arguments. But he's an inscrutable chap. You look at his face, if he's thinking, you're a twat, I'm not listening, would you tell? Could you really know?
No, exactly. See, he could have been thinking about something else the whole time.
Yeah,
I know AC Greatley.
He could have been saying in his head, la 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 la, I'm not listening, I'm not listening.
I know AC Greatley said he was
la,
talking
la,
a
la,
bit of crap,
I'm not.
But you know, and I agreed with everything you had to say. Okay, we've got, and now I got a surprise for everybody.
Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?
Hooray!
Has Trev got a Catholic story this week?
I sure have. It's got the catchy title of Pedophilia in Philadelphia. Sorry about that. But it's true. It's, yes, it's...
No, it was catchy. No, go on.
But, of course, it's dreadful. But it's in Philadelphia where a cardinal and bishops in an archdiocese have been accused of failing miserably at being open and transparent in their dealings with board members investigating cases of sex abuse. Now, the archdiocese said on May the 17th that its understanding of the best way to investigate and act on abuse allegations, especially those not pursued by civil authorities, has continuously changed over the years. Oh, that's a bit of a strange sentence.
Hmm.
Particularly that, especially those not pursued by civil authorities. Why were any of them not pursued by civil authorities? The statement also pointed to the hiring of a guy called Albert Tochidlovsky to the new position of Delegate for Investigations. He's charged with immediately reporting new allegations to law enforcement officials, investigating suspected abuse, and ensuring that allegations are properly reported to the review board. Or just doing what any reasonable person with a shred of compassion or civic duty would do, with the addition of a little obstruction of justice with his own investigation.
Ah. So in
response to an investigation, they're just shifting all the onus of responsibility to one guy.
Yeah. But, as you said, kind of like creating a position for no reason, really, because just other people should be doing that shit.
Yeah. How have you not been doing it? And how can you say you're not going to do it from now on because you've just employed another guy? It's insane.
It's almost like a political move. I find a lot of the stuff that, you know, you read about the Catholic Church, it's very political, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like all about PR and a lot of the stuff they do seems very calculated. And maybe they're kind of doing themselves an injustice because they're behaving like politicians, because politicians really are as low as you can go, really, aren't they? Behaviour wise.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah. Scum.
There is also a thing this week that English and Welsh bishops reintroduce meatless Fridays for Catholics.
Yay. Well, to be honest, I think Catholics need to suffer more. I don't know what they're doing in Scotland. So, yeah, take the meat off them.
I'm all for having a go at the Catholic Church, but the actual Catholics themselves...
I know.
I don't know if I'm...
I'm joking, Trev. Okay, I don't really have anything against Catholic people. But, you know, Fridays, important. You know, they shouldn't be eating meat. They should be eating fish. That's the rule, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
It was relaxed in England and Wales in 1984, but not in Scotland. And this is why. It says here, it allowed Catholics to then choose their own form of Friday penance, such as offering additional prayers, attending Mass, or abstaining from alcohol. There you go. Scotland didn't pick that one up.
That's not what happened in Scotland, is it?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You just had a go at me for having to get Catholics. You've just had a racial slur saying that all Scottish people are drunks now. What?
Little bit of casual racism.
Ah.
I do apologise to any Scottish people listening live, but it's 9:15. You're probably pissed. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Just misunderstanding for comic effect. That's what I'm doing.
Well, my hatred for Catholics was for comic effect, and no one found that funny.
Sorry,
I don't
mate.
Hate Catholics, honestly. Qualifier. Not that I know any anyway, so...
Oh, you know my dad.
Is he a proper Cath, is he?
Well, he's a non-practicing Catholic.
Has he got beads and stuff?
No,
that's no shit. Don't
I don't know what he gets up to in his own time, Jonathan.
Well, so worse than your mama jokes is your dad's a transvestite jokes. Now we're at.
You don't have to be a transvestite.
It's quite early
to
enjoy in the podcast.
Beads. It's not too early. We've got 13 minutes to go. You got another Catholic... Oh, those are your two Catholic stories.
It was, yeah.
Wow. Have you got anything else you want to add?
Well, yeah, in the metro today, the wife and daughter of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi crossed the border into Tunisia several days ago. It was claimed last night. Thankfully, the article does go on to make clear that his wife and his daughter are in fact two separate people, which was a bit of a worry for a while, because you never know a Gaddafi.
Indeed.
Dodgy, freaky-faced looking fella. Oh, yeah, and I don't know if anybody else has...
His face reminds me. Do you know, do you remember that scene in RoboCop when the guy falls in the acid? And
yes.
Yeah?
Just before he gets splattered across the car.
That's it, Trev, yeah. The toxic waste. That's what's happened to Gaddafi, isn't it? He's falling in a vat of toxic waste. Face is melted.
Brilliant.
I'm going to move on quickly. Go on.
I just wanted to make sure... I hope that it's one of the stories that you want to bring up, but the... Two suspects in the Stephen Lawrence murder who are going to face trial. That's fantastic news today.
That is good news. I only caught that
so
towards the end of the day, unfortunately, so I didn't get to read the whole thing and research it. But it is good news, yeah, definitely. But there's been some other news this week, and well, it's been going on for a while, but it's got bigger and bigger as this week's gone on in particular, and I thought we may as well bring it up now, because we are going to be celebrating it, and that is, of course, that the world's going to end on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
Bad times.
How does that make you feel, Steve?
Well, you know, it's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Any particular...
So basically, if you downloaded this podcast on Friday... and you found something offensive, what are you going to do about it? You've got a day.
Yeah. Filing a libel case is going to take ages.
So can I say something libelous?
No, no. Because we're having a barbecue on Saturday because we know it's not going to end. But unfortunately, Harold Camping of some, and I will say this word, cult in America, has predicted the end of the world.
Woohoo!
Which is going to be great. Well, no, it's not the end of the world. It's rapture, isn't it? So apparently, all the good people, this is his, you know, I'm paraphrasing him now, get to disappear, and it'll leave us all in peace.
That would be great.
That's been the ongoing joke, is it'll be nice and peaceful.
And so, how many of those people that really believe have actually sold all of their earthly possessions and given all their money to charity? Like Jesus said you should do anyway, even if the world isn't going to end.
Yeah.
But now they've got no excuse. Have they done it?
Well, a lot of the cult members certainly have, and I mean, this is going to be my point about how, you know, a lot of people might just shrug this off as, but I think this kind of behaviour is quite insane, because a lot of people have sold all their possessions, given the money to his. It's not a church; it's more of an organisation, because it's a radio. It's a syndicate, a worldwide syndicated radio network. And, you know, they've all got on these tour buses to go around. They're basically sandwich board wearers.
But what do they base their assumption that the end of the world is going to be on Saturday on?
Okay.
What's the calculation? How they work that? Ridiculous.
Right, apparently it's 7,000 years since the flood.
Is this using the right, okay, yeah. If we're
this is Howard Camping. He's calculated it, and he said it's 7,000 years since the flood. And apparently it's 7 days, and 7 days is 1,000 years to God, apparently, in the Bible.
Right.
Okay, and so therefore 7,000 years is Saturday coming. And not just that, he picked up some other dates and things, and he added the numbers up, and they all equaled the same date, and the numbers are all special, because they equal 17 equals heaven, and 10 equals righteousness or something. So he's backed it up with a lot of data. Yeah.
So did he know that the world was actually created at about 3-ish in the afternoon? Because that's going to skew his figures.
Well, he thinks it's happening at 6 p.m., so it's not early Saturday. You know, it's not going to ruin your life.
Is that what? Is that Eastern Standard Time, Pacific Time?
Well,
GMT, BST, what are we talking?
Apparently,
there's a lot of 6 p.m.s going on there.
No, it's going to happen. The earthquake is going to happen. 6 p.m. everywhere, so it's going to be a wave that goes around the world in time with the sun.
Okay.
Good.
So the idea is that
there's
we will
be 24 earthquakes going on.
Yeah, okay. We will have, if you stay up, well, no, not stay up, but we will see news reports of other places around the world, apparently.
It's in before us.
You know, seeing the rapture, so you'll be seeing earthquakes happening, but at the same time, you'll see all these people dancing up to heaven and that.
So whatever cataclysm occurs, it's only going to be travelling east in a line, is that right?
Well,
west in a line. It's travelling west. But there's not going to be radiating out from some central point. It's just going to be moving in a straight line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
so it goes against
somebody with a ruler knocking over dominoes.
Well. Yeah. Well, it would. Hey, hang on now. Now, you can't say that, because if this is a supernatural event, it can happen however the bloody hell it wants to. It doesn't need to conform to physics.
Right, I thought the rapture was just taking the people up to heaven. So why are we having the earthquakes? I don't get it.
Well, it's the end days, isn't it? We're going to have a couple of. It's only a couple of months until October the 1st. Hang on.
But I thought we had a bit of time, though, just to, you know, peace and quiet.
Yeah, until October the 1st. So that doesn't mean that our lives can't be a living hell until you know, October the 1st, when it's the real fiery pit for the rest of us. So I'm looking forward to it.
So why is the fiery pit coming 1st of October?
This is another thing he's worked out. He's just saying that everyone gets raptured first, okay, all the true Christians get raptured first, and then the rest of us get to hang around wishing that we had been true Christians,
because, of course, you know, rapture not actually being a biblical thing anyway.
Yeah, because there's no basis for the rapture in,
so, you know,
the Bible.
All these Bible believing Christians who believe in the rapture,
yeah. But they would just say you're a heretic, Steve, so...
They want us to be terrified of being left behind. The phrase left behind is permeating American culture at the moment. And I've got a feeling it's because... I've got a feeling it's because in America they had that thing for education of children that said no child left behind. And when the Catholic child abuse scandal came out, it was no child behind left. And so now they're just trying to make those words mean something else entirely.
Yeah. So this is just, you know, a massive scam by the Catholics to cover over, you know, their child abuse.
I'll pin it on them.
Great. So, so everybody, I don't know.
What can you do? You can't pack your bags, can you? You know?
No.
Get some bottled water in, get some tins of ham, go and find a cave somewhere.
Yeah, I think in one way it's a positive thing. Everyone else is just going to have a good time, maybe. I think it's an excuse to have a party to show these nutters that they are nutters and that we don't care.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we should all have a nice party. I'm planning on having a party with you guys, so that's going to be good fun.
Good call.
But at the same time, there's people who've been duped into this. There's people who've had hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings, given them up, sold their property, given them to paying for billboards around the states. There's families that's been brought apart, that ripped apart. There's a guy who said, I left my wife and children to come and, you know, preach that, you know, the world's coming to an end. So
this is one of the reasons why churches should not be allowed charitable status. Jesus said, sell everything, give your money to charity and to the poor. These people have sold everything and they've given it to the people who are organizing all this, who are going to end up, when the world doesn't end, with all the rest of the money.
But yeah, I mean, you know, the question would be this, isn't it, right? Okay, you think the rapture is going to happen on Saturday. Why do they need all of the money? Obviously, they need some advertising hoardings, you know, but... You know, you can't take money to heaven with you. So.
No. I think it's all. So it is seriously all going on billboards.
But I mean, have they spent every dollar of it?
Apparently so. Yeah.
I don't believe that for a second. Somebody.
Well, the top people, Harold Camping, I would believe he has an emergency account to resurrect his network. Should it not happen
in the Cayman somewhere? Is it?
The question is, who's going to have a camera on his face on Saturday at 6 p.m. And what is he going to say? I mean, they already brought out a rapture bingo of how he's going to weasel out of this. Because it's not, he's just not some crackpot who's set a date. He's got a lot of cash behind him and he's got a large network.
It's the same as the Jehovah's Witnesses, though, isn't it? When they said the world was going to end... Well, they've said it's going to end about four times so far, haven't they? And it hasn't ended. Yet they're still making prophecies of doom.
The question
Jesus
is,
said the world was going to end in the lifetime of the people he was talking to.
Hmm. But he also said that only the Father knows the hour. So, conflicting messages again.
I think, I hate to keep bringing up the Catholic Church, but weren't they the ones that invented the Wandering Jew? Just invented this character out of whole cloth to explain the fact that Jesus said that? There is somebody from Jesus' time out there just kind of being alive so that when
I've heard of that. So that there's still, so that the times are still going.
Yeah.
Is that seriously insane. Still part of their theology?
I don't know if it's still part of their theology, but I have heard of that.
Because I know they went through a kind of a period of pruning a lot of their doctrine.
Bad doctrine.
Yeah. So
John Paul jettisoned an awful lot
of
crap.
Didn't actually prune the kiddie fiddlers.
Or the condoms thing. They didn't prune that, yeah.
Yeah.
Bummer. Right, well, we've got a couple of minutes left. I mean,
did you guys hear about the self-crucifixion in South Korea?
No.
Self-crucifixion? How'd you get the nails in?
Well, this guy was found by the police in South Korea on a cross, nailed to the cross, with a crown of thorns, and he had been pierced in his side. And they said, suicide. In much the same way as when a guy being questioned by... the Greater London Police in the 70s finds himself at the foot of the stairs. He threw himself down.
Well, he just slipped, didn't he?
Well, actually, they did have reason to think that this one was a suicide. It was very elaborate. He had they found an electric drill that he had used. He had hammered the nails through his own feet, done all the damage to himself, and then hammered the nails into the nails were already hammered into the cross before his feet, obviously. But then used an electric drill to do a hole through his hands, and then he fitted them over the nails.
So he's quite practical. So he was a carpenter.
Yes. Yeah, he has that in common, at least. And I don't know if it happened 3 days ago. You never know.
Ooh. Or it could be 3 days Saturday. No, okay. Right. Well, I think we're going to finish it there. We're on time. We're on schedule. We've done well. We've covered all the major stories. Well, actually, I missed out a couple of things, but maybe we'll do them next week. I'd like to thank my co-hosts.
Cool. Oh, thank you, John. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hey, that's okay. And you haven't said anything really dreadful and appalling.
Yeah, I suddenly realised halfway through the podcast that I hadn't actually got anything really shameful to say, because nobody ended up with any story I could do some innuendo with and make myself look like a right cock so that Trev would have to close out again. But I'll work on that. I mean, come on, it's early days. I'm sure we can fit that in. So,
it works.
So
there you go.
It's not that bad.
Talk about beads and my father, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm okay insulting other people. It's when I start, you know, insulting myself. Anyway.
When
you, go on,
when you
sorry,
start inserting yourself into the process.
Yeah. Thank you very much to everybody who listened and who listens. Remembers to leave a good review
feedback
on iTunes. Sign up. Come talk to us on Facebook. We're wanting to talk about all sorts of nonsense. So come along. So it's bye from me.
And bye from me.
And me as well. What the hell? Bye.